The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Receive $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Paranormal. Remember, go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Paranormal to get $35 off your first week of deliveries. Thanks, HelloFresh. The Paranormal Podcast is also brought to you by Gaia, the streaming TV service dedicated to exploring the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. Access 5,000 years of wisdom for less than a dollar. The first month of your Gaia membership is only 99 cents, so sign up today by going to Gaia.com/gym. That's Gaia.com/gym. Thanks, Gaia.
This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harold, and I'm so excited. We've got a big day coming because we have Uri Geller on the line, the world-renowned, world-famous psychic. He's been doing this stuff for decades and can't wait to talk to him and get some insight about his career, maybe some things you don't know about, and just his perspective. It's a fascinating discussion, and I think you'll enjoy it. Also, Teresa Chung and Claire Broad join us. We're going to talk about things like heaven, what happens after we die, and mediumship, and looking forward to that as well. I think you will enjoy this edition of the Paranormal Podcast, and here it is. Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And today is truly a red letter day on the program. We literally have probably the person who is most famous for what he does in the world and has been that way for decades on the line. I'm talking about Uri Geller. He joins us from Israel today, and he is the world, simply, I would say, the best known psychic. Where you're talking about telepathy, telekinesis, spoon bending. Uri Geller has been doing it for decades, and there's a lot of different layers to his story, and we're going to try to get in as many of those as we can in a short amount of time. Uri Geller, welcome to the program today.
Hey, Jim, thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. Yes, I'm in Israel, and I'm in a very magical place called Old Jaffa. Old Jaffa is right next to Tel Aviv. It's 6,000 years old, and we decided, my wife Hannah and I, about a year and a half ago, we decided to come back to our homeland after living about, 48 years out of the borders of Israel. So we lived in New York, we lived in Japan, we lived in England, and now we are back. And as I'm speaking to you, I'm looking at the Mediterranean, the sunset is going to happen soon, there are palm trees around me, there is a church 200 meters away, there is a mosque down by the sea, there is a synagogue, we're in a beautiful enchanted garden, and I'm speaking with you.
That's fantastic. And it sounds absolutely, absolutely lovely. Now, you're at this point of your story in your life, but I've got to find out, how did this all start for you growing up and finding that you had these powers? I mean, what was the first inkling that there was something different about Uri Geller?
Okay, I was born in Israel, actually not far away from here. My mother got pregnant in Jaffa. Then she moved into Tel Aviv, the center of Tel Aviv, a place called Rothschild Boulevard. I was born in a small hospital very close to that boulevard. And then something amazing happened. This is almost a fantastical story. Sounds like science fiction, but it is true. I was about 5 years old. There was a big Arabic garden opposite our apartment building. And I used to play there, and one day I heard kittens cry. So naturally, I was 5 or 6. I was looking for them. And suddenly, out of nowhere, I encountered this huge sphere of light. That's all I can explain it to you as. It was amazing. I obviously didn't realize what it was, and I just looked at it at awe. And the next thing I can remember was a beam of light, very powerful, almost like a laser beam sharp, hit my forehead, emanating out of this sphere. And it was so powerful that it knocked me into the grass. I don't know how long I lay there. I ran home to tell my mother excitedly, but of course she didn't believe me. She thought that I was either making it up, dreaming, or fantasizing this. But I stuck to this happening. I wrote about it in my books. I wrote about it everywhere. I spoke about it on television and documentaries and so on, because I knew it happened. I've got to now rush about 50 years ahead. And then I was on a BBC, in a BBC documentary that was played in Israel. And the next day I got an email from an older gentleman who described himself as an ex-Air Force officer. And he said, look, Uri, I heard what you said about this fear of flight. And let me tell you, I was there. So you can imagine, I jumped on the email, I emailed him, I called him. And he told me that he was walking back to his parents' home. And he saw this little boy in a big garden and this huge sphere of light. And he described how he ran into the apartment building and this thing exploded on the facade of the building and kind of darkened it. So going back now to when I was 6 and 7, I was eating soup. And to answer your question, the spoon started bending in my hand, broke in half, and that was it. I knew that I had something very different, very unique. Other kids couldn't do it. And yeah, I don't know if it had anything to do with that encounter, but because it was validated by a relatively important or prestigious, you know, Air Force officers, I just knew that this did occur.
Now, let's fast forward some time now. Obviously, you served in the Israeli military. Now, how did you become an entertainer? How did you say, well, I'm going to, and I want to get into the other stuff that was in the secret life of Uri Geller on the BBC documentary about maybe some other things you did. But in terms of entertaining, how and when did you decide, you know, this is something that people would basically pay to see, want to see, be interested in, to entertain and also inform them about these kind of this kind of part of life? When did that happen for you?
Well, we were very poor. My father divorced my mother. He was basically a womanizer. I loved him to bits to the day he died, but he left my mom, divorced him. She took me to Cyprus, where I grew up for 6 years. And we were always broke. We never had money. And I knew that with this talent, with this skill, I'm going to be successful. You see, I already happened to step on something that we all know, the secret, the law of attraction. If you think positive, if you believe in yourself, if you're motivated and inspired to achieve things in life, they will happen. They will come into your life. So my dream was to stop my mother from working. I wanted to buy her a television set, a radio. She was working as a seamstress, as a waitress. And I'll never forget the days we used to come to Jaffa when I was about 8, 9, 10. And she would buy old American parachutes in the flea market here, from which she would sew kind of women's dresses, because that was an additional income. So I knew that with this weird and bizarre and strange and even unique talent, I will demonstrate it to kids, to teachers in school, to my mother's friends. Everyone was amazed. Everyone was shocked when a spoon bent or a key bent or I did a telepathical mind reading. And really, I realized that there is this awe factor, there is entertaining factor attached to it, because if you are amazed by something, it means that you're not only amazed, but you're also entertained by something that you cannot explain. Already at a young age, I knew that it will be hugely controversial, because I knew that I was attacked by scientists who didn't believe. They thought it was all trickery and magic and sleight of hand and trickery, and you name it. After the army, after the Six-Day War, in which I was wounded in Jerusalem, I started performing in house parties. And the word got out. These house parties started from photographers, because I was also a male model at that time. And one day I bent a key of a photographer. He totally freaked out. And he said to me, Uri, how on earth did you do this? And I said, oh, well, I have this power. And he said, well, I'm giving a party tonight. You must come and show us your powers. So my first reaction was, sure, I'll come, but how much will you pay me? Because that's, you know, I wanted to be successful. I wanted to earn money. And in that first party, I was shocked myself at how the people around me reacted. And that's when I knew that this is it. I am going to make it big time in Israel. But I didn't know how. So these house parties started becoming more prestigious, from photographers to lawyers, from lawyers to judges, from judges to generals' homes. And one day, in a general's home, the prime minister of Israel was there. Her name was Golda Meir. And I knew that this was my chance. So I walked up to her, gave her a piece of paper, and gave her a marker. And I told her, there were no Sharpies then, but I always carried a marker in my pocket. I told her, go to the restroom, go to the toilet, close the door, and draw a secret drawing on a piece of paper. And come out, hide it from everyone, and I'll read your mind. So she went to the toilet. I think I'm the only person in the world that ever sent a prime minister to the restroom on command. But she drew a drawing. She came out. I looked her in the eye, and I duplicated it. It was exact drawing. It was millimetrically exact, and it was a Star of David. And the next day was the beginning of my career, Jim, because she was being interviewed on Israeli radio. And suddenly the presenter asks her, Prime Minister Golda Meir, could you tell us, or can you predict the future of Israel? And she, without hesitation, she said, oh, don't ask me, ask Uri Geller. And that was it.
That was a big mention.
That was the biggest plug in my life. The phone started ringing in my tiny apartment. You know, impresarios, managers, agents, they all wanted me to do this demonstration on big stages in front of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. And that's how it started.
And that was kind of unique. The only person I can think of from the 70s, and I'm not saying that he does the same thing that you did, but it was popular on talk shows and things, was Kreskin. But it wasn't like being a singer. You know, there's a path when you're a singer. Really, you kind of created the path in a way. I mean, I'm not aware, unless you're going back to vaudeville days, people who went out and really addressed mass audiences with the things that you do.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim, if I may boast a little, so I might be showing off now, but, you know, I originated spoon bending. There was nobody, for 6,000 years, nobody bent metal. So suddenly I come along and I show metal bending, spoon bending. And, of course, it got to the, you know, into the CIA, heard about it from Israeli scientists, and then they were the ones that took me out of Israel, the American Defense Department, in 1972. But bringing something new, and I always say that the secret of success is originality. If you can come up with an original idea and create it, you made it. And I'm pleased to say that, and that's the phenomenon. It doesn't really matter anymore whether it's real or not, but I managed to instill spoon bending into world culture. Look at movies like The Matrix, with the first Matrix with Keanu Reeves, who learns how to bend a spoon from a child. Then I'm flattered, but I will say that George Clooney played me in a movie, The Men Who Stared at Goats. Robert De Niro played me in another film called Red Lights. There are famous singers like Johnny Cash who sing about spoon bending. So it's really almost like a cultural icon. And I am even in Pokemon. They made a Pokemon character. I'm even in Pokemon Go. Kids run around the world and they find Uri Geller, Kadabra, holding a bent spoon. So I look back, Jim, and I say, wow, how did I do this? I mean, how is it possible that a tiny little, almost trivial demonstration of spoon bending catapulted me almost into world stardom. And so really, that's the answer, Jim.
Now, let me ask you this. The things that you do, the examples that you provide, the presentations that you give, the demonstrations, is it all, I mean, you're an entertainer. There's no question you're an entertainer. Is it all psychic, telekinetic ability, those kind of abilities, 100%? Or is it maybe a mixture of telekinetic abilities, and entertainers use stagecraft and they use magic? Is it a mix?
Yeah, okay, Jim, I'll answer that. And I've been asked that question even harsher. Are you real or are you fake? Now, this is my answer. It's very simple. For decades, all my life, in the beginning, I called myself a psychic. Then I reinvented myself because I'm a master publicist. And I'm saying it shamelessly. I knew how to invent myself, how to go with a trend. This is why you're speaking to me now, because I'm still around. And to be around after 50 years is not an easy task. But I'm a natural entertainer. I'm a natural promoter. I have no agents. I have no managers. I have no PR people. I have no image makers, nothing. I made it all kind of me, my family around me. And I've been asked that question a million times. So then after calling myself a psychic, I called myself a paranormalist. Today, I call myself a mystifier. And if you ask me straightforward, Uri, is what you do, is it real or is it trickery? And I will answer you, it's real. That's it, full stop. Whether you believe me or not, that's your problem. When I'm asked this question on hundreds of television interviews, I say, you decide, you make up your mind. And the reason is very simple. You see, in order to be well-known and, let's say, famous, you must be controversial. You must have an edge of controversy to your life, to your persona, to your psychic, to your character, to your personality. If you're controversial, people will speak about you. There were thousands and tens of thousands of articles written about me. Not all of them were positive. I never read them. I measured them. Were they a full page? Wow, that's all I wanted. So all the skeptics who attacked me for decades, among them the famous James Randi, etc., etc., I owe them 1,000 bouquets of flowers. Because, Jim, they are the ones that fueled the wheel of controversy. The skeptics were the ones that created the myth around Uri Geller. So I love drawing fire. So when I say I'm real, there are those who say, no, he's lying. It's not true. And that's when controversy is formed. And the best example, Jim, listen to me carefully, and all your podcast listeners, best example is the president of the United States to be in a few days, Donald Trump. You followed probably his campaign. The things that were thrown at him, the names that they called him, from a liar, a charlatan, a con man, I mean, they're awful. The worst names he was called, and he was elected. So that is the best example to tell you that controversy equals publicity. Full stop.
I agree with you fully. There's an old saw, I guess it's something like, you know, I don't care what you say, just spell the name correctly.
Exactly. And let me just add what Oscar Wilde said, what, 110 years ago? Oscar Wilde said, there is only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that's not being talked about.
And we're talking with Uri Geller today on the Paranormal Podcast. It is our pleasure, and we'll be back with more right after this. The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. And we've been featuring HelloFresh on the Campfire Podcast for quite a while. They've been successful on that side of the fence and said, hey, we want to talk to those people that listen to the Paranormal Podcast who may not tune into the Campfire. So we're so glad to welcome them. It's such a great service. I'm a fan. I'm a user of it. And I think you're going to love it. Now, what's the concept if you've not heard of it? Well, here it is. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. Each recipe is designed to take about 30 minutes to make in your kitchen, and the recipes are set up in such a way that anyone can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in about 30 minutes, whether you usually cook for yourself or, like me, not so comfortable making home-cooked meals. HelloFresh has the freshest ingredients and measured to the exact quantities needed. So there's no food waste. I mean, how many times have you gone to the grocery store, you buy ingredients, you kind of guess, and you've got all this leftover stuff that you spent money on, plus, it's not a good thing to waste. So it really helps you out in that way. And plus, it takes away that trip to the grocery store and fighting the crowds and trying to get the stuff to your car. Everything from HelloFresh is delivered right to your doorstep in a special insulated box. And I've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone in the Paranormal Podcast audience $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code Paranormal. Now, I really enjoy HelloFresh meals, and one that I had recently, excellent. It's their Spanish one-pan chicken with chorizo and bell peppers. Now, if that sounds like something you get at a good restaurant, that's because it is, and I'm looking at, I recall the taste, and I'm looking here at the picture because they sent you this great recipe, and it shows you everything that comes in it, and it's making my mouth water looking at the picture right now because it was so good. In particular, I never had chorizo before, and those it's dried chorizo that's in there, and it's just delicious. Now, I'm going to tell you, if it were up to me to make something like that without the guidance and the ingredients of HelloFresh, what do you think the chances are that I would do it? It would not happen, but thanks to HelloFresh, it did, and it was delicious, and you are going to love it. So, again, how do you take advantage just to give it a try? And I really think you should. I mean, we're busy people these days. It's like in between work, and if you have a family, taking care of the kids, getting the kids off to school, it's just busier than ever. And this is one of the things, I think one of the important things I've learned over time are try to find things to take the stress out of your life. And that's what I think HelloFresh is. And still eat healthily, reduce waste, and have a great dinner. HelloFresh.com. Use the code Paranormal to get $35 off your first week of deliveries. That's HelloFresh.com and use that code Paranormal to get $35 off your first week of deliveries. You're going to be thanking me. You're going to be sitting at dinner with your family, and you're going to say, boy, that Jim Harold, I'm so glad he told me about HelloFresh. Please check it out. It's HelloFresh. Thanks, HelloFresh. We're back on the Paranormal Podcast. Our guest is Uri Geller, and actually you can find a lot of information on him over at urigeller.com, and he'll tell us more about that later in the show. One thing I want to talk about briefly, Uri, is the kind of people that you associated with. Now, we said you created this whole new kind of category of entertainment, and you see pictures of you with people like Elton John, and you were friendly with Michael Jackson and so forth. I mean, what was that like? Because you were kind of like a non-rock star, kind of commiserating with these people.
Yeah, well, with Michael Jackson, that was a very interesting story. When he was 14 years old or 15, I had a show at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. And after my show, the usher comes up to me and she says, Mr. Geller, do you know that Michael Jackson was sitting there? And I said, what? Do you mean the Michael Jackson? And she said, yes, he had a little disguise on, but we recognized him. And I ran out to the lobby, looking for him, but he was gone. Two decades later, I was sitting at the house of Muhammad Al-Fayed, who was the owner of Harrods in London, whose son died with Princess Diana in Paris. And Michael Jackson and Dodi Fayed had some kind of movie deal. And Michael called Muhammad, and I was sitting next to Muhammad. And Muhammad tells Michael called from New York. He says to him, Uri Geller is sitting next to me. And I heard actually Michael shriek out, Uri Geller. And he handed me the phone. And that was the beginning of a very interesting and unusual relationship. I flew to New York on a lecture, and I met him there, and we befriended each other. And I even, very few people know this, but I designed his last album, his last ever album, So if you guys at home, if you have Invincible, that's the name of his, Michael's last CD, you can open the booklet and you'll find my drawings there and what it says about me. But the other people, you know, I wanted to be a psychic rock star. I wanted to meet Elvis Presley and John Lennon and Elton John and you name it. I was, I wanted to emulate them. I wanted to be like them. And I didn't realize that they wanted to meet me more than I wanted to meet them, because they saw me probably on Johnny Carson, Merv Griffin. So I rubbed shoulders with the famous. But don't forget that I was also then, Jim, I was on an ego trip. I was after fame and fortune. I wanted to make it. I wanted to become a millionaire. So I was, in a way, quite ruthless about going and pushing my career. And then it was interesting to meet these celebrities because, to me, you know, some of these stars, I only saw on the big screen. And suddenly I meet them in the flesh. So, yeah, I circulated around them and with them.
Now, creative people like that, whether we're talking actors, directors, singers, musicians, they seem to have almost a greater interest in this kind of thing. Is there something about them? Do they themselves tend to have some of these types of powers in your view?
You know, Jim, that's a brilliant question, by the way. Very good. I've been interviewed thousands of times, but nobody quite asked me this way. Look, people in power, whether you're a politician, a president, prime minister, king, queen, whether you're a famous singer or an actor or sports person, you have power. You're sitting in the driving seat and you have everything. You're a very rich person. You have millions of dollars. You're famous. And you're looking for something else. You are looking for something different. Maybe spirituality, maybe powers of the mind. Because just think, Jim, if you could go out and buy a Ferrari any day, anytime, if you can buy a penthouse anywhere, any size, you know, you lose a major, major part of the zest for life, the quest for life. Do you agree with me?
Yes, that's why I think a lot of these people get into trouble with drugs and things, because they can't get a kick. There's no frontier left to conquer.
Exactly. So many, many of these people go the direction of drugs and terrible alcoholism and so on. But some of them do want to acquire the power. So I remember that I've met dozens and dozens of prime ministers and presidents. The first thing when they see me bend the spoon, they take the spoon out of my hand and they say, can I do it? Can you teach me to do it? I want to do it. And I always smile because it's a far-out reaction from all of them equally. They all want to bend the spoon. They all want me to teach them to bend the spoon. And then there is a slight a tinge of angriness in them when they can't. There is a kind of a disappointment because they're on the top. They have everything, but they can't do this. So that answers your question. Yes, very famous people always want to be able also to do something psychic.
Now, I want to ask you about one thing, and then I want to get into the psychic spy part of your story. Donald Trump, you predicted that he would become president against the vast majority of the predictions of the intelligentsia. And we don't get political on these shows per se, but I have to ask, as we record this on Tuesday, January 17th, he's going to be inaugurated the end of this week. And by the time folks hear this next week, he will be president. Do you have any breaking predictions you'd like to share with us in terms of the future of the Trump presidency, pro or con?
Look, let me tell you how I knew that he's going to become the president. It's really a very bizarre theory. But when I was about 40 years old, I started noticing that my eyes were attracted to 11:11. I would stand with my back to a digital clock on the wall. Something would make me turn around. It'll be 11:11. Started noticing it in my car, in the kitchen, on my computers, in hotel rooms. And I thought to myself, what on earth is going on? How are my eyes kind of moved or attracted to 11:11? So I wrote about it on my website, and lo and behold, I started getting hundreds, maybe even thousands of emails from people all around the world saying, oh, Mr. Geller, I can't believe this is happening to me. It's this. And then I did a research, and I discovered very interesting. George W. Bush, 11 letters. John Kennedy, 11 letters. Bill Clinton, 11 letters. Jimmy Carter, 11 letters. Barack Obama, 11 letters. Donald Trump, 11 letters. So then I had the guts to write a very short piece on my Facebook. Whether you like it or not, guys, Donald Trump is going to be the 45th president of the United States. I took a gamble on the 11-11, and I was right. I knew that I was right, but I didn't know what reaction I'll get. And you can imagine, the Donald Trump haters sent me emails, left terrible messages on my Facebook. But by the way, Jesus Christ, count the letters. It comes to 11 letters. It is really an amazing phenomenon. I have theories about it. It's on my website. I urge you all to get on urigeller.com and read my theory, what makes your eyes attracted to 11-11, and when it happens, what you have to do. But I think that he's going to be a good president. Definitely a game changer in Washington. And that's my feeling. I'm also concerned. I already sent messages to make sure that he's well protected, doubly protected by the Secret Service. And use your imagination why, I don't have to tell you. And I think that only positive things are going to come to the American people, and hopefully in the Middle East too.
Well, there you have it. There's Uri's perspective on that. A very hot topic these days. Now, I have to ask you about this. I just watched a fascinating documentary over at your website, The Secret Life of Uri Geller, produced by an Oscar award-winning or nominated, I believe, gentleman, and also on the BBC a couple of years back about your life as a psychic spy. So I'll just ask you straight out, you know, in addition to being a worldwide known entertainer, were you in fact a psychic spy?
Well, the answer to that is actually the film. So I urge you, all of you, to get on my website and watch the Secret Life of Uri Geller. What I can say is the following. Yes, the CIA studied me. The American Defense Department financed the studies. When the Americans realized that this is real, then they used me. I worked for the CIA for a few years. The missions I got are in different books on my website, but the best book is The Secret Life of Uri Geller after the BBC documentary. I think you'll find it fascinating. The documentary was directed by an Oscar-winning director, Vikram Jayanti, who won an Oscar for a documentary he directed about Muhammad Ali. And I've done some very unusual things. The things I can reveal to you are, you know, they got out by, I don't know, synchronicity, or a photographer took a picture. But at one time, the Americans asked me to convince the Russians to sign the nuclear arms reduction treaty and, of course, do it telepathically because the Russians didn't want to do it. So the head of the American Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Claiborne Pell, flew to London to brief me with Ambassador Max Kempelman. Then they took me to Geneva, and I got very close to Yuli Voronsov, who is the head negotiator from Russia, and I bombarded his mind telepathically, and they signed. Of course, I cannot take full credit that it happened only because of me. I will really never know. But there's no doubt in my mind that I was influential because I know what I can do telepathically. I also got the Israeli Red Cross and the Palestine Red Crescent into the International Red Cross. That's also on my website. One day when President Carter was lecturing after he finished his presidency in a university, in a college, a young student got up and asked him, President Carter, did anything strange or weird or bizarre happen while you were the president? And President Carter said, well, yeah, you know, we lost a plane. A Russian plane crashed in Zaire with top secret information, nuclear information. And we want to to find the plane first. And we did. So he alluded to remote viewers, to people who have intuition, to people who still work in the American Defense Department, deep black. And this goes around in major intelligence services. I'm talking about the big ones like China, Russia, America, Germany, Great Britain. So, yeah, remote viewers are helping intelligent agencies gather information with, intuition and telepathy and whatever you want to call it.
Well, it's interesting because one of the frustrating things for someone like me who I'm a believer, it doesn't mean I believe everything, but I am in general, I lean towards the believing side. The skeptics just laugh and say, well, that's the thing that they make funny movies about. But governments, I know at least in the past, the Soviet government and the U.S. government have looked at this stuff extremely seriously. So it's not a joke.
No, Jim, there is a book about to come out in March. I urge you all to get it. My books are free to read on my website, but this book is called Phenomenon. It's written by a very well-known, famous, if you Google her name, Annie Jacobson.
Oh, I've interviewed Annie twice.
Yeah, so she's a Pulitzer nominee. You know, that's serious. Her books, her late last books were all on the New York Times bestsellers list. And she spent like 2 or 3 years researching the secret work of the American Defense Department. So her book is about to come out. I think it'll blow your mind. Absolutely. You have no idea what happened. And I'm talking now about the American government. But the same type of things that you will read in Annie Jacobson's book, the same research and secret activities are well known in other, equivalent to CIA in other countries. And I'll tell you why it's happening. Because, first of all, they bring in valid information, and it's cheap. You don't have to activate satellites. You don't have to send people out to ground. It all happens in a small room with 3 or 4 computers. That's it. And intuitives or remote viewers send their mind through space and time and bring back information. And then they check that information, and it's valid. It's real. It's tangible, and it's credible, and it works. And if you think that the American government terminated psychical research or working with remote viewers, you're wrong. In my opinion, the work still continues.
And I guess the idea would be is if it does continue, you wouldn't necessarily want everybody to know that it's continuing, would you, being in an intelligence agency?
I cannot confirm or deny the question, what you're asking me directly. I will not confirm or deny it. But just use your imagination and intelligence, Jim. Come on. You know that people, you know what, let's forget telepathy and psychokinesis. Let's talk about lighter human consciousness. Let's talk about intuition. You understand, if you are intuitive, you can achieve amazing things because it's consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness is a state or quality of awareness or of being aware of an external object or something within oneself. And it has been defined as science, awareness, subjectivity. It's the ability to experience or to feel wakefulness, having a sense of selfhood and probably the executive control of your mind. Now, if you can have consciousness, which everyone has, you can definitely sharpen that consciousness, which is called intuition. And with that intuition, you can travel to different places and bring back information. And it's not mumbo jumbo, it's science. And I'll have to go back to, if we have a few more minutes, back to 1924, when a very clever man came up with an amazingly powerful equation, scientific equation, with which he proved to the world that everything is made from energy. And of course, that equation was E equals mc squared. And of course, that was Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein proved that everything is made from energy. The table, the phone I'm holding, you can bang the wall in your house. You think it's solid, but it's not. It's energy. Your energy, I'm energy, our soul is energy, and energy cannot be destroyed. So when you think, when you send a thought wave out there to the universe, that's energy. And that's why the law of attraction works, because if you think positive, if you believe in yourself, if you think of success, you send that energy capsule to the universe returns it to you, and it makes your dreams come true. If you think negative, you're sending a negative thought, it'll come back to you, and you'll continue being miserable and not successful and stressful and so forth. So putting aside, you know, the big things of moving the objects with the power of the mind, reading someone's mind, put that aside. There are things that are today, any scientist will tell you, yes, it is possible.
Can individuals, now there are rock stars in this. There are people who can do above and beyond. I think of, you mentioned Muhammad Ali. You know, I guess anybody to defend themselves can throw a punch, but there was only one Muhammad Ali. In the same way about psychic powers, is that something that we can all use to a degree, but there's only one Uri Geller, there's only one, you know, fill in the blank of another person? I mean, are some people truly superstars, but this is something that everybody can use to some degree?
Yes, I think you're very correct, Jim. You know, you brought up Muhammad Ali, but I went out to his New Jersey training camp, and I met him, and I taught him how to concentrate on his opponents that he's fighting in the ring. And Muhammad Ali was very open-minded because he was kind of an amateur magician. He liked magic, but he also took the powers of the mind very seriously. So you brought up a fantastic example. So yes, you can, there are levels of intuition. There are levels of consciousness and subconsciousness. There are degrees of powerful minds. But I think that overall, you can enhance it. You can sharpen it. You can exercise it. And like anything, if you play basketball for 2 hours every day on a court, you will be better in score, you know, putting the ball into the basket. It's about exercise. If you lift weights in 1 year, you'll gain muscle. So, yeah, the mind can be exercised. The mind is powerful. I am a great believer that we use only 10% of our brain. Maybe I'm using a fraction more. Who knows? But if you train your mind, you can become more intuitive. If you're more intuitive, you will become more successful, because you will be able to draw that success into your life.
I've got to ask you, because you don't strike me as the kind of person who just stands pat and stands still, that there's always another vista. There's always another frontier. What's next for Uri Geller?
You know, the last frontier is not space. The last frontier is your mind. Now, I am very down to earth. I haven't changed much from 1972 when I left Israel. I'm very approachable. I'm recognized in the streets, so I take the selfie. I sign the autographs. You know, I stayed anchored. Now that I'm back in old Jaffa, I found a building that is about 2,000 years old. It hasn't been touched for 400 years. I'm opening an Uri Geller museum, because I collected amazing stuff throughout the last 50 years. So my Cadillac, which stood already in the Museum of Jerusalem, Museum of Israel in Jerusalem, which happens to be one of the most famous and prestigious museums in the world. I bought that Cadillac in New York in 1976 to show off. And then I riveted 3,000 bent spoons given to me by Elvis Presley, John Lennon, Jacqueline Kennedy, you name it. All the presidents of America's spoons are on it. I've got interesting items from David Bowie, from Michael Jackson, from Muhammad Ali. I've got huge crystals. It's going to be an amazing museum. It'll take me a year to refurbish, but that's my project now. I still do lectures around the world, and when I get emails, I get 300 emails a day. And I will finish with this. I get emails all the time to do podcasts, but I decline most of them. But you sounded like a real nice guy, so I said, okay, I'll do the interview. when I get an email from a teenager, oh, Mr. Geller, please teach us how to bend a spoon, my answer is immediately this: forget spoon bending. Instead, focus on school, believe in yourself, become a positive thinker, create a goal to go to university, never ever smoke, never ever touch drugs, and always think of success. And that is my message.
That's an outstanding message. And Uri, again, where can people find all this treasure trove of information on you?
Okay, my website, very simple, www.urigeller.com. And Uri Geller is spelled URIGELLER.com. You'll find my email on that website. And if you email me, believe it or not, I'll answer you. You can read my books free, books by other people about me. I urge you to look at the documentaries. And I hope that I'll get a few emails from your listeners. Jim, you've been a fantastic interviewer. You sound to me like a real nice guy. And if synchronicity has it, we're going to meet.
That would sound fantastic. It would be my pleasure. Our guest today has been Uri Geller. And this one really stood out. Uri, thank you for joining us today on the program.
Thank you. God bless.
That is certainly a gentleman I've wanted to get on the program for many years, and so glad we were able to do it, and we thank him for his time and his insight. Next up is Teresa Chung and Claire Broad, right after this. The Paranormal Podcast is brought to you by Gaia, the streaming TV service dedicated to exploring the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. Now, you're listening to this program, and that means that you love these types of topics, this kind of information. You want the cutting edge of metaphysics, ancient wisdom, and the unexplained. But where do you go if you want a streaming TV service dedicated to the topics we love? Well, there is an answer, and it is Gaia. Gaia explores the topics we enjoy so much and is always providing viewers with tremendous new and fresh content. And January is no exception. This month alone, there are great new topics being explored. Beyond Belief with George Norrie features Roberta Grimes on the afterlife. David Wilcock and Corey Good explore the Law of One and the SSP negative forces on their Gaia program, Cosmic Disclosure. Regina Meredith's Open Minds explores ecstatic trance. And don't miss the new hit series from best-selling author Greg Braden. Now, I know you'll love Gaia. And how do I know that? Well, I love it. And it's a great time to join because the first month of your membership is only 99 cents and you can cancel at any time. To mine the wisdom and be entertained and enlightened, just go to Gaia.com/Jim. That's Gaia.com/Jim to sign up for your first month. It's only 99 cents. Start the new year off right. 5,000 years of wisdom now streaming on Gaia. History like you've never seen it. That's Gaia. Thanks, Gaia. The question of heaven. That is a question that I know for me is one of the real keystone ones. Is there a heaven? Is there an afterlife? I think it's really, and as I've said many times on the programs, well, for almost 12 years now, believe it or not, that I think it's almost the biggest question you can ask, because we might not all see a UFO. We might not all see a ghost. We might not all see Bigfoot. But I have some sad news to report. We're all going to die, at least physically die. The question is, do we go beyond? And we have a great person to talk about that today. I'm talking about Teresa Chung. She's the best-selling author. Her books include ones like An Angel Healed Me, An Angel Called My Name, The 10 Secrets of Heaven, and her most recent one, Heaven Called My Name, Incredible True Stories of Heavenly Encounters and the Afterlife. Teresa, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jim, for having me. I really appreciate it.
I think when you come to the question of the afterlife, and specifically the question of heaven, there's so many people out here today. We were talking about off air here before we started about people being cynical. I think so many people are cynical, and I think there is this huge view among many people that heaven is just a fairy tale that man has invented to kind of soothe his ego. What do you think's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that idea, because actually, if it is a fairy tale and it makes us feel better, I actually don't think there's anything that makes us feel better in my book is good. If something makes us feel better and makes us happier, kinder people, that's in a way bringing heaven to earth for me. So even if I'm proved wrong, and I always say in my books, I could be totally wrong. I'm just writing my books from my own personal experience and from 25 years researching, interviewing, studying people who've had near-death experiences, afterlife encounters, and what I've learned from that. I present that, but I always say one of us is right and one of us is wrong. We'll only find out when we pass. However, I choose to believe because of what my experience is and what I've learned, and that makes me feel happier, and it makes me hopefully be a kinder, happier person. So that's my rationale. You can choose a path. If the path that you choose in not believing makes you happy and makes you a better person and you do no harm to others, fine, have that belief. But that's what I present to my readers. I say, this is the most empowering path for me. Read my books, weigh up the evidence like you would in a court case, and make your own mind up. I'm very much about people making their own mind up, forming their own path to heaven. However, I will say, I am now almost beyond doubt. I will never say completely beyond doubt, because that's very arrogant. But from all I have read and all the amazing people I've spoken to, I have been very privileged to write book after book about the paranormal, about the possibility of life after death, to talk to scientists, to talk to writers, to talk to experts, to talk to atheists as well, and a whole range of people. The overwhelming majority of evidence for me says there is something in this. All of us cannot be mad.
Now that's the question. You know, when you're, let's say you're a physical scientist, a hard scientist, and you're looking at a chemical compound, that's something you can investigate very concretely. This is something that's much more ephemeral and is based a lot more on accounts and in what some would say in almost a derogatory manner, anecdotal evidence.
There are so many scientists now studying it from a scientific perspective. And the experiments are amazing results that are coming across. Dr. Julie Beischel, for example, her research on mediumship, way above the laws of probability. And that's the Windbridge Institute in the States. It's leading the world now in studies on mediums done under scientific controls. The research that is coming out from there is mind-blowing. And it's all quite new. But it is showing that the gap between science and spirit is closing, and the Institute of Noetic Sciences is also leading the way in that, in their studies on precognition, in channeling, in afterlife encounters. They are studying it because they are scientists first and foremost, because when I interviewed them for my page, I said, aren't you a bit biased? Do you not all believe? And she said, no, it doesn't matter. Some of us don't believe, but what we're doing, it's like if you were testing a drug, you want to see the effects, and this is what we're doing. We're testing these stories and these experiences from a scientific perspective. And it doesn't matter to us whether we prove it right or wrong. We are scientists first and foremost. And these anecdotal experiences are data. We are treating them as data. There are too many accounts. In any other walk of life, if you had this number of stories coming through, it would be treated as data. And it needs to be catalogued and researched. And there is now the whole movement in science of actually studying what is consciousness. Does something survive after death? I mean, we've got this amazing near-death study with Dr. Sampania as well, you know, thousands of near-death stories. But scientists are approaching it now from a scientific perspective, and that is so exciting, as you can hear from my tone of voice.
What is heaven? What is your best guess of what it's actually like?
I haven't been there myself. I haven't had a near-death experience, but I know many people who have, and I think I've probably read thousands of accounts now. Heaven, very much, I believe, is what you create right now with your thoughts. That the kind of heaven people go to is what they've kind of, their idea of what heaven will be like right now. That we're kind of creating heaven every moment with our thoughts, which actually makes you very responsible for how you think. So think positive and good things, and that's more what you're likely to go to. But heaven is the survival of the part of you that observes you. Let me explain. I often ask my readers this. If you go to heaven, which you will go to heaven? Will you go as a seven-year-old? Will you go as you are now? Will you go, you know, there's so many different forms of us as we go through our life. However, outside of all that, there is us observing it. Now, myself as a child has died, but I'm still alive. And that's how I see death is, of us just continuing on, but in a different form. Because the 18-year-old me has died, But I have memories of that 18-year-old. It was very much alive at the time. But me, my essence goes on. And that is heaven. It's just another transition to another plane, another spiritual plane. That's what I believe it to be.
Doesn't there seem to be something innate about the belief in the afterlife? Now, I commented on one side that so many people are cynical these days, but yet this persists, this belief. Why does it persist among mankind?
It persists because there are so many things about this life that cannot be explained. The scientists can say what they like, but nobody can yet explain why we're here and what our reason is, and that spark of life. We still haven't been able to create that spark of life. I worked in a hospice for many years and witnessed many people departing, and it's like a light goes out, and when their body is lying there on the bed, it's like clothes. The spirit has gone. And it's that spirit, that spark of life that defines you, which I believe, from all I have researched, is eternal. That's why I think we believe it. I mean, if you take that away, if you take away the belief in life after death, it's not a kind of a life that I would want to live. It would be a life without meaning for me.
Teresa, one thing that I think people worry about and ponder. I know I think about this. When we have loved ones who pass, is there any reason to believe that we'll be reunited in some way on the other side?
Every account I have read and people have written to me, absolutely, 100% yes. Absolutely, without doubt. I mean, almost every account I get some kind of reunion. Not always with the people we expect sometimes. Sometimes your reunions are with most unexpected people. But yes, there is certainly that element in all the accounts that are sent to me. And it's blissful. And so many people who've had these experiences, I know, because when they write to me, it's like they have a calm about them. And they have an afterlife encounter or experience or a vivid dream. And it just gives them a sense that they are not alone and that their loved one in spirit is watching over them. What they're mourning is the loss of the physical presence. Of course, that can never come back, but they enter into a new relationship in spirit. And they feel them around them in various different ways. And my books explore all the different ways that you can sense a departed loved one close by.
Maybe you can give us a couple of those, because the thing that, here's the problem that I have sometimes, because like everybody else, I've lost loved ones. And it's sometimes when you hear that inner voice and you feel it might be, for example, my mom's passed. And sometimes I'll think, oh, well, she's saying something to me telepathically. And then I'll think, it's just, you know, you cooking this up in your mind, things that you know she would say in a given circumstance.
You don't separate them. It could well be your mother. You're overthinking it. It probably is your mother. The very fact that you're thinking about your mother makes her alive. It brings her alive. I mean, if you close your eyes and you see her face, it makes her alive. And what would she say to you? That is real. That is your mother coming through and saying to you what you need to hear. You then going away and dismissing it is fear. It's fear. I mean, the biggest number one thing is we fear it so much. We don't trust. If you just trusted, you would know. Sorry, I don't mean to criticize.
No. I asked the question.
I mean, that's actually, my books are quite funny because I'm one of the serious doubters. I second guess myself all the time. I mean, I've had powerful intuitive episodes in my life when I have actually heard things and I've doubted it. And I talk actually about doubt as being a path to heaven. I think we doubt because heaven wants us to grow. I think that doubt is one of the most powerful calling cards from heaven. So every time you're doubting, Jim, I think that's actually heaven reaching out to you. Because when you say you know something for sure, you're static, you're not evolving. Doubt forces us to question. You see, you're asking me this question, and it's all about evolution for me. I think that we're in this life to constantly evolve and grow and learn spiritually. I think very much of this life as school. And doubt is one of the most powerful heavenly calling cards. When you're doubting if there is life after death, that is heaven saying, find out, research, learn. It's trying to pull you closer.
It's interesting what you said about, you know, sometimes you're a big doubter. And the thing is, as I mentioned before, I've been doing these shows now. This year will be my 12th anniversary of doing various shows on the paranormal. But even so, and as much as I think I am a believer in the sense that I believe there are things going on, and I do actually believe in an afterlife, I will still come back and doubt. Yeah, that's the weird thing.
But the greatest thinkers, the greatest mystics had great, in the dark night of the soul, we hear about it with saints like Mother Teresa, my namesake. You know, they are, in fact, the mystic or spiritualist who says, I 100% know, is one I would not trust. Because we cannot know. Doubt is heaven calling for you to grow. And I hope you always doubt. Because the moment you stop doubting, the only thing we can be certain of in this life is that we're not going to know. And as paradoxical as that sounds, that is the most powerful doubters are the people who move humanity forward. People who say they know everything and they know how it should be and they have closed minds are the people who drag humanity backwards. If you see what I mean. The more doubt you have, I mean, and scientists need that. They have to have this open mind to move forward. And it's the same with spiritual development and contact with the other side. I mean, as you'll hear when we speak to Claire, the medium I'm co-authoring it, she has moments of great doubt whether it is actually helping people what she's doing. Because she said her life would be so much easier if she didn't have this gift, this ability to intuitively sense the presence of departed loved ones. Her life would be so much easier. She doesn't actually particularly want it. So doubt is somebody like that who's standing up there every weekend, you know, for no fee and giving messages from the other side. I mean, she's not doing it for any reason. But she doubts all the time. And I think every mystic, if you read the biographies of great mystics and healers, doubt. Even Christ had his temptations, you know. So there is doubt. Doubt is I think, the most powerful calling card from heaven to make us evolve and to make us move forward. So I hope you never, never fully know, because you wouldn't be doing this podcast probably then.
That's true. Now, one thing that interests me, and I'm curious if you've had any accounts of this, is kind of deathbed visions, that sort of thing. That fascinates me. Is that something you've run across in your research?
Oh, yes. Look, I have a whole chapter on it. And as I said, working in a hospital, I can certainly vouch for that, things that people have said. Moments of extreme lucidity as well, people suffering from dementia or whatever, and an hour or so before they die, they become extremely lucid or speaking in different languages or seeing things and clearly seeing things around their bed. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of nurses too. If you talk to nurses, I mean, nurses have so many stories. It's almost like I get a lot of nurses writing to me about what they have seen in the change in people just before they die. A peace descends as well. Not in all cases at all, but in some cases I've had some beautiful, beautiful stories of people saying names that they could never know about, people that they hadn't known past and saying them on their deathbed. It's almost like they can see them. I mean, that the film Ghost, you know, that scene, I've had too many stories. And I said, these people are not, the people who write to me, they're not insane. You know, they come from all walks of life. I've had serious academics, scientists, doctors, lawyers, you know, from young kids who write to me, to moms, to dads, to atheists saying, well, Teresa, I didn't actually believe in all this. And that's often how some of the letters start. I didn't actually give it a second thought or didn't actually believe it, but I've had this encounter. I saw something. I dreamt of something and it happened the next day, or an incredible coincidence happened to me that has made me think there is more to this life than meets the eye. You know, so they're writing. I mean, yes, you could say it's all random and it's all chance. We don't know. But I think some of the stories I've had are so compelling. And that's why my books have gone on to be some of them top 10 Sunday Times bestsellers, because obviously a lot of other people are reading what I've written and it's resonated with them. There's just too much for me. And I am quite skeptical. I mean, I'm an academic. I mean, my background is I'm from King's College, Cambridge. That's where I did my master's. And I'm an academic. I doubt just like you do. And I question. But it's 25 years now, and I'm still thinking there is something there. There has to be something there. And that's what I do on my page, on Facebook, and in my books. I say, here's the evidence. Weigh it up for yourself. What do you make of this? These people are not lying.
Are there negative experiences associated with the afterlife, hell-like experiences, anything like that?
I have never had one sent to me, but I've had this asked before, and there are people who I believe who've encountered hell or had a terrible time, but I think that's more the ego. Anything that I have had sent to me about heaven, the very definition is it's that it's peaceful, gentle, and comforting. But I'm not going to deny that there are some accounts where people say that they go into eternal torment or whatever. I don't know, because I have not actually had it sent to me. You know, I'm still waiting for those accounts to come. I haven't yet had them. So I have looked into it. And for me, they seem very much more like in the category of hallucinations. Whereas the deathbed visions and near-death experiences, they don't fall, because there's certain criteria for hallucinations. And I cover this in one of my most popular books, The Afterlife is Real, where you look at the difference between hallucinations and afterlife paranormal encounters. There is a very real difference between the two. Hallucinations, for example, specifically disorientate, and people don't feel positive and empowered after. Afterlife encounters and paranormal encounters, people tend to feel terribly energized. They change their life for the better. They're not disorientated. There isn't a setback in their recovery, that kind of thing.
Want to keep up on the latest paranormal news? Then follow @TheJimHarold on Twitter. Jim is constantly tweeting out top stories on the supernatural. I want to know, when does this guy sleep? Anyway, follow Jim @TheJimHarold on Twitter today. Now we return to the show.
Now, we're going to be joined shortly by Claire Broad, who you're working on a project with. But first, we love stories on these podcasts. Can you tell us one of your favorite, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, heavenly stories?
I could go on forever. As I said, I have so many. But for me, my favorite stories are the simplest ones. And one that I always has as a place in my heart is of a lady who was really, really mourning the loss of her mother and wondered if she should see her mother's dead body. But her mother had always said, "Don't do that. I want you to remember me as alive." However, her family pressured her greatly to see, you know, her lying in state, as it were, but she refused. And during the funeral, she was wondering whether she made the right decision. And during the funeral, she felt her mother kiss her cheek. And you could say that's a very simple story, but she actually felt it. And she knew her mother was saying, "You made the right decision not to see me like that. I'm still alive. I'm still around you. I'm in the breath. I'm all around you." And it's simple, powerful stories like that, that just, you know, they speak to my heart. And I get countless stories sent like that. And they're the simplest ones. I mean, I get the more complicated ones of lives being saved and dramatic encounters. But as I said, it's the simplest heartfelt ones where somebody just felt a kiss on their cheek. And she intuitively knew deep down, this was her mother saying, "You did good. You listened to me. You weren't pressured. I'm here and I always will be."
Indeed, that is a powerful story, Teresa. And now we're joined on the line by Claire Broad. She is a medium, and I know she's working with you on an upcoming project. Claire, welcome to the program today.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about your work in mediumship. When did you discover this gift? And give us a little bit of background.
Okay, so I've been a professional medium now for knocking on 20 years. I started very young. So I was about the age of 4 when I had my first encounter with the spirit world, actually. And I didn't do anything with that other than that surprised my family. And at the time, it didn't surprise me. I was only 4, so I just took it in my stride. But that left with me an experience that there is more to this world than we are currently taught, or is mainstream knowledge and acceptance. And so as a teenager, when I started to experience more phenomena around me, I started to look into it. So I was about 19, 20 when I first met with a medium. Her name was Sheila Thomas, and she went on to become my own teacher. I sat with her for 10 years. In the UK, we have something called a circle, where people come together and literally sit in a circle to learn and develop and understand what spirit communication is. So I was under her guidance for 10 years. And then she gradually took me out into the public forum, to demonstrate what I call evidential mediumship, which is a term that is bandied around quite a lot now. But the word evidential is really important when it comes to mediumship, because obviously that's what it's about. It's about trying to provide an experience to those who haven't maybe experienced a spirit contact for themselves, to be able to give them a little bit of faith and comfort in the knowledge that consciousness survives physical death. So it's been a lifetime of unfoldment for me, but 20 years of actually working with it now.
Now, Teresa, you're both collaborating on a project that's coming out this fall. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I have been writing about the paranormal for 25 years. I have flashes of intuition and insights into the afterlife, but I am not a professional medium. Claire has been a professional medium for 20 years, but has not had the opportunity to tell her story. I went to one of her demonstrations, was in awe, and it just, the pieces of the puzzle fit together, and that she had what I was maybe lacking, what I would like my books to develop into, and I could give her a platform to talk about what it's like to be a medium, what it's really like, because I gather together afterlife stories and encounters, put in my own research and who I've spoken to. You know, my books contain interviews with people like Anita Morjani, Ben Alexander, Dr. Julia Mossbridge, etc. But I'm not the real deal. I don't stand up there in front of an audience and give messages from the other side. I'm more a facilitator, a communicator of saying that I powerfully believe, and this is the evidence I've got. Claire is out there putting herself on the line every week, if you see what I mean. She has clients, she does private readings, she does sold out demonstrations in theatres, and as I say, every week in spiritualist churches. And it was time, I felt. I'm very, very blessed that I get book after book. And I'm kind of written so many books now. There's only so much the world can have of Teresa Chung. You know, I've written close to 100 books, would you believe? I've been so blessed. I started with the Element Encyclopedias, which have become classics. The Element Encyclopedias of 20,000 Dreams by HarperCollins, and then Psychic World. But now it's time for me to hopefully give a platform. And I hope she goes on to do many, many more books, because she is very, very inspiring, as you can already tell from hearing her, and to tell her story. I don't know what it's like to be a medium, and I know people are fascinated by it. And also, she's been doing videos on my Facebook author page, which are riveting, talking about the questions you ask. Is there a heaven? Why is there a heaven? Why is there suffering? All these big questions that increasingly I can't draw on my research anymore, and my almost not limited, but I need to expand my writing, and I'm so excited by the collaboration. I think it's going to be an amazing book. Answers from Heaven, November.
Now, Claire, how does Teresa's work dovetail into what you see? In other words, when you read the stories that Teresa has chronicled over the years, does it fit with what you hear from your sources on the other side, as it were?
Yes, I think the thing is that spirit communication is so multifaceted, and there's so many ways in which they manage to make contact with us. Mediumship is just one angle of it. So Teresa does such a fantastic job of bringing together all aspects of it, which is what's going to be so exciting about this book, is that we're going to bring all those aspects in. And the spirit world have the major theme that comes through. If I think about all the readings and my own personal experiences over the last lifetime of mine, the major theme is that consciousness does survive physical death, that they are well and that they are okay, and that they are trying to come back and let us know that we don't have all the answers, and that even they don't have all the answers, that their eyes have been opened. And for many souls who move into the spirit world, for them it's an opportunity to come back and to try to make good, even sometimes, of things that they have as unfinished business, or just to allow a little bit of healing in someone's life, to let them know that they don't need to be upset. And so it can sound very trite, but these contacts that in whatever form they take have a very common theme, which is obviously why mediums and spirit communication in general comes under such a lot of scrutiny or skepticism. Because, you know, I've lost count of the amount of people that have asked me to give them the lottery numbers and things like that, or to, you know, provide names, addresses, and goodness knows what else. But, you know, they're not interested in that. If you could see a wider, bigger perspective of life and of consciousness itself, would you be worried about whether you're providing the lottery numbers? I mean, at the end of the day, even if you win the lottery, but it's wonderful, I'd love them to give me those numbers. It's going to go at some point. You're going to die. You're going to have to leave that all behind. And so they're really giving us a treasure beyond what we can gain in this material world of ours. So the messages are simple. They're messages of trying to show that life goes on, that we have eternal progress open to us, that we can keep growing and learning, that life is exciting and joyful, and that we shouldn't get caught up in the illusion of it all and forget who we really are. So, and in whichever way that information comes forward, it pretty much boils down to those key things, which I feel are so empowering and motivating. They eliminate the fear to some degree of the fact that we are all going to die at some point. They allow us and give us permission to live and to live in honour of them, because they are living well in their next life and they want that for us. They don't want people to get stuck in grief and to get caught up in a particular moment in time. They want us to move with life and to see the beauty in it. And I feel that that's the major essence of what they bring through and what Teresa brings through in her book so beautifully.
Now, either or both of you can answer this. And hopefully this will be one of those questions of like, oh, I didn't expect that one. What about in either of your work and research, what surprises you about heaven, or what might surprise us about heaven?
For me, it's the humor that comes through. I mean, some of the stories are quite lighthearted. That has surprised me, because I one of my early ambitions was to be a nun, and I went and spent some time in a retreat to consider my options, and it was all quite serious. And then when I broke away from that and started to embrace and more see that spirituality was different from religion, I found that it's humor. I think the other side wants us to lighten up, literally, in many ways, that there needs to be more lightness of spirit. That has surprised me, because I thought, you know, you see pictures of praying saints, it's also earnest and whatever. And I think laughter, I think people are so close to heaven when they laugh and when they smile, more than we realize. We don't value those things enough in life. Those sinful things, just having a laugh and a smile, a good-natured laugh. But that has surprised me about some of the stories, that they're actually quite funny. That the people on the other side have still retained that kind of lightness of spirit. That surprised me more than anything. I wasn't expecting it, because I was a very serious person growing up. In my books, you can see I'm a very serious, sort of earnest person. And to learn in my life that maybe I should lighten up a bit, that the more I lighten up, the closer heaven feels. It's hard in a world that's often dark and cruel. It's a big challenge to do that. I'm not saying, you know, that we should ignore the suffering that's going on, but that there is a lightness on the other side.
Claire?
Yes, I concur with that. I think for me, the idea of heaven is blown out of the water with what I read and learned growing up from stories in the Bible of perhaps an old man sitting on a cloud somewhere. You know, I've learned from the spirit that heaven is just as much here as it is in the spirit world. Heaven is a state of being, and that's why that joy that Teresa's talking about most often is echoed through spirit contact. They are more alive than people here when they come through. That's the joy that I often like, that their humor, they often come through wanting to experience people laughing and to experience the upliftment that they can bring. I often receive quite funny messages where they're joking and playing around because of that. They want us to know, first and foremost, I think, that you don't have to be perfect to enter into a heavenly state of being. No. You know, in the spirit world, there are many different dimensions. You have to understand, there's not the language really to even explain this, but there are many different dimensions, states of being, and that we're not perfect. Those in the spirit world that move into spirit haven't suddenly become all awakened, all knowing spiritual masters. They're very much who they were, learning and growing and evolving, and there is perfection in that in itself. And in my mind, the word heavenly really does describe a euphoric state of being. It's not a place I'm going to. I can have it here, I can have it in the spirit world, or I can have it in neither. And, you know, I think I was very surprised when some of the teachings I was receiving from my own spirit teachers were along the lines of the fact that in the spirit world, there are people who are less enlightened than many people on earth, that they are still learning and need to grow that side of life, and that there are many layers. And so they are just as much helping those in the spirit world to grow and to become enlightened as they are here, because we are all spirit, whether we're in material form or whether in the non-physical form. That consciousness is what's key. And so to me, it is the humor, it is the joy, it's the not having to be perfect, it's to be exactly who you are and to enjoy that journey and that growth. That's what it means to me.
I agree. I think so many people, they feel they have to copy or follow or get all the rules. And I think what heaven wants is us to be who we are. So many of us don't know who we are. We think we've got to copy someone. I mean, Claire and I would hate it if people read our book and felt, oh, we've got to follow all their directives.
Absolutely.
Only if it speaks to your heart and spirit. Find out who you are. When you go to heaven, you won't be asked, did you copy Moses or did you copy Buddha? They'll be saying, I'll be asked, were you the best Teresa that you could be? Were you the best Teresa Chung that you could be? Were you you? Were you the best and highest expression of who you could be? Not someone else. Don't copy, don't follow. Find your own unique you. And we're all sort of looking out for a religion to tell us, to give us rituals and rules. And I'm sure Claire gets up with her clients. They're telling that they want her to tell her them how to be. No, we've got to find out. That's why we're here. One formula for all. That's not it. We're all unique miracles, expressing heaven in our own wonderfully unique, beautiful, radiant way. And that's what we have to discover, and to stop burying that, not hiding our light. So many people hide their light. They let fear and all the other rubbish turn their lights off. And that's what hopefully Claire and I are trying to do with this book. You know, switch your light on, you know, without sounding too Disney, shine, you know. that's what the other side wants, you know.
And I think one of the really key things is to think for yourself and to have the freedom to be a free thinker. It wasn't until I let go of all beliefs that I had, when I started to have experiences that I couldn't understand, and I do have a very analytical brain, and I'm thirsty and hungry for the science and to understand what this is that's happening to me. But it wasn't until I let go of all past preconceptions and other people's ideas and thought for myself that I actually blossomed. That's when I began to get in touch with my own spiritual self, like Teresa says, who I really am.
Claire, that it would be a lot easier for you if you didn't have this gift, because Claire, she doesn't say, but she had a career at Walt Disney and Leo Burnett. I mean, she was very high powered. She could have, her life could have gone another way, but while she was working there, she was doing this as well, not for any reason, but because she's called to do it. And there are people like that who are called to do it. I think we all have it to a sense, but some are more developed in others. And Claire's often said, you know, my life would have been so much simpler if I didn't have to go and do this. But it's a vocation.
Well, the question is, where can we follow these vocations of both of you? Where can we go to find the books, more information about what both of you do, and the upcoming project as well?
Well, you go first, Claire, and then I'll...
Yours is a long list. You can find me over at www.clairebroad.com, and I'm currently writing this book with Teresa, which is such a joy, that will be out in November, called Answers from Heaven. So if you can look out for that book, and I would welcome everybody to come and get to know me through that book, because I will be sharing more stories and intimate accounts of my life and the readings that I have experienced with people, and the teachings from the spirit world that have been given to me. And then lastly, you can also come and join me at my own Facebook page, Claire Broad Mediumship.
Excellent. Teresa?
And for me, it's www.teresachung.com. My popular Teresa Chung author page on Facebook, which is now, I think, over 100,000 followers, which is incredible. And Claire posts there every Tuesday evening with a video or something inspirational, or linking into her page. So it's a way to find out about Claire as well. my upcoming book in November with Claire, which will be co-authored between Claire Broad and myself, is called Answers from Heaven. It's published by Piatkus. We're hoping that this is going to be a really important book that can actually get spirituality and the paranormal really taken seriously, because I hope that we come across as credible and sincere, because we both are. We wouldn't do it. We've been around enough to know that this truly comes from the heart. That's the reason we're doing it. And my other collaboration, which I'm doing, as I said, I'm teaming up with the head of the Church of Jediism here, Daniel Morgan Jones, because one of my passions is to make the paranormal more accessible and get more and more people interested in talking about what really matters in life spirit. And I'm writing a book for him, with him, about the concept of the Force in Star Wars. And because the Force, basically, Jim, is spirit, the paranormal, and how you can work with that. So that's going to be exciting. As I said, I'm looking forward to these hopefully really exciting, powerful collaborations in the future.
Teresa Chung, Claire Broad, thank you very much for joining us and giving us some answers about heaven. Well, thank you to Teresa and Claire. It was a pleasure to speak with both of those ladies, and also to Uri Geller. What a fascinating show, and I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll join us again. And as I said last week, please, if you want to keep independent podcasters going like me, it's important to go and rate and review their shows on wherever you may listen, particularly if you listen over at the Apple Podcast section, and you can find that on iTunes or the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. Please go in and rate and review us. Hopefully give us a 4 or 5 star review and say why you enjoy the program, because again, we don't have those big marketing budgets and all those cross-promotional opportunities that the podcasts supported by the big conglomerates do. But what we do have is you, and I think that's the most important thing. So please show your love for the program, and we plan for staying strong for many, many years to come with your support, that is. Please support our sponsors, and please tell a friend about the Paranormal Podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye. Now for the legal disclaimer. We do not accept money from publishers or content producers in exchange for interviews. However, as with most media outlets, in the majority of cases, we do receive complimentary copies of books and DVDs that we feature on our podcasts. Your purchases of books, DVDs, and other items via our Amazon.com links benefit Jim Harold and JimHarold.com and help us continue our programming. The sponsor messages you hear on the programs are paid endorsements, although we really do like them. For the full disclaimer, go to JimHarold.com, and thanks for listening.